time was not come to preach the gospel of peace to the heathens, all their nations being in a ferment, and Pastubi and Mingo Matah having told me in terms in my own house, now our enemies are all about us, and we can do nothing but fight. But if the beloved ones should ever give us to be at peace, then we would hear the great word. Wednesday, December 23rd. Mr. Delamont and I, with the guide, set out to walk to the cow pen. When we had walked 2 or 3 hours, our guide told us plainly he did not know where we were. However, believing it could not be far off, we thought it best to go on. In an hour or two, we came to a cypress swamp which lay directly across our way. There was not time to walk back to Savannah before night, so we walked through it, the water being about breast high. By the time we had gone a mile beyond it, we were out of all path, and it being now past sunset, we sat down intending to make a fire and to stay there till morning. But finding our tinder wet, we were at a stand. I advised to walk on still, but my companions, being faint and weary, were for lying down, which we accordingly did about 6 o'clock. The ground was as wet as our clothes, which, it being a sharp frost, were soon frozen together. However, I slept till 6 in the morning. There fell a heavy dew in the night, which covered us over as white as snow. Within an hour after sunrise, we came to a plantation, and in the evening, without any hurt, to Savannah. Chapter 2. Troubles in Georgia. Return to England. Peter Bowler. I felt my heart strangely warmed. Begins to learn Spanish. 1737, Friday, March 4th. I wrote the trustees for Georgia an account of our year's expense, from March 1, 1736 to March 1, 1737, which, deducting extraordinary expenses, such as repairing the parsonage house and journeys to Frederica, amounted for Mr. Delamont and me to F44/4S.4D. Monday, April 4, I began learning Spanish in order to converse with my Jewish parishioners, some of whom seemed nearer the mind that was in Christ than many of those who called him Lord. Tuesday, the 12th, being determined, if possible, to put a stop to the proceedings of one in Carolina who had married several of my parishioners without either banns or license and declared he would do so still, I set out in a sloop for Charleston. I landed there on Thursday and related the case to Mr. Garden, the Bishop of London's commissary, who assured me he would take care no such irregularity should be committed for the future. Sunday, July 3rd. Immediately after the Holy Communion, I mentioned to Mrs. Williamson, Mr. Coston's niece, some things which I thought reprovable in her behavior. At this she appeared extremely angry and said she did not expect such usage from me, and at the turn of the street through which we were walking home went abruptly away. The next day Mrs. Coston endeavored to excuse her, told me she was exceedingly grieved for what had passed the day before, and desired me to tell her in writing what I disliked, which I accordingly did the day following. But first I sent Mr. Coston the following note. Sir, to this hour you have shown yourself my friend. I ever have and ever shall acknowledge it. And it is my earnest desire that he who hath hitherto given me this blessing would continue it still. But this cannot be unless you will allow me one request, which is not so easy a one as it appears. Do not condemn me for doing, in the execution of my office, what I think it my duty to do. If you can prevail upon yourself to allow me this, even when I act without respect of persons, I am persuaded there will never be, at least not long, any misunderstanding between us. For even those who seek it shall, I trust, find no occasion against me, except it be concerning the law of my God. July 5, 1737. Wednesday, the 6th. Mr. Costin came to my house with Bailiff Parker and Mr. Recorder and warmly asked, "How could you possibly think I should condemn you for executing any part of your office?" I said short, "Sir, what if I should think it the duty of my office to repel one of your family from the Holy Communion?" He replied, "If you repel me or my wife, I shall require a legal reason, but I shall trouble myself about none else. Let them look to themselves." Warrant for Wesley's arrest. Sunday, August 7th. I repelled Mrs. Williamson from the Holy Communion, and Monday, July 8th, Mr. Recorder of Savannah issued out the warrant following: Georgia, Savannah, SS. To all constables, tithing men, and others whom these may concern, you and each of you are hereby required to take the body of John Wesley, clerk, and bring him before one of the bailiffs of the said town to answer the complaint of William Williamson and Sophia, his wife, for defaming the said Sophia and refusing to administer to her the sacrament of the Lord's Supper in a public congregation without cause, by which the said William Williamson is damaged £1,000, and for so doing, this is your warrant, certifying what you are to do in the premises, given under my hand and seal the 8th day of August, Anno Domini 1737, Theo Christi. Tuesday 9th, Mr. Jones the constable served the warrant and carried me before Mr. Bailiff Parker and Mr. Recorder. My answer to them was that the giving or refusing the Lord's Supper being a matter purely ecclesiastical, I could not acknowledge their power to interrogate me upon it. Mr. Parker told me, "However, you must appear at the next court, holding for Savannah." Mr. Williamson, who stood by, said, "Gentlemen, I desire Mr. Wesley may give bail for his appearance." But Mr. Parker immediately replied, "Sir, Mr. Wesley's word is sufficient." Thursday the 11th. Mr. Costin came to my house and among many other sharp words said, "Make an end of this matter, thou hadst best. My niece to be used thus, I have drawn the sword, and I will never sheathe it till I have satisfaction." Soon after he added, "Give the reasons of your repelling her before the whole congregation." I answered, "Sir, if you insist upon it, I will, and so you may be pleased to tell her." He said, "Write to her and tell her so yourself." I said, "I will," and after he went, I wrote as follows: "To Mrs. Sophia Williamson, at Mr. Costin's request, I write once more. The rules whereby I proceed are these: so many as intend to be partakers of the Holy Communion shall signify their names to the curate at least some time the day before. This you did not do. And if any of these have done any wrong to his neighbors by word or deed, so that the congregation be thereby offended, the curate shall advertise him that in any wise he presume not to come to the Lord's table until he hath openly declared himself to have truly repented. If you offer yourself at the Lord's table on Sunday, I will advertise you, as I have done more than once, wherein you have done wrong. And when you have openly declared yourself to have truly repented, I will administer you the mysteries of God." John Wesley, August 11, 1737. Mr. Delamont, carrying this, Mr. Costin said, among many other warm sayings, "I am the person that is injured. The affront is offered to me, and I will espouse the cause of my niece. I am ill-used, and I will have satisfaction, if it be to be had in the world." Which way this satisfaction was to be had, I did not yet conceive, but on Friday and Saturday it began to appear. Mr. Costin declared to many persons that Mr. Wesley had repelled Sophie from the Holy Communion purely out of revenge, because he had made proposals of marriage to her, which he rejected, and married Mr. Williamson. The jury's charge against Wesley. Tuesday the 16th. Mrs. Williamson swore to and signed an affidavit insinuating much more than it asserted, but asserting that Mr. Wesley had many times proposed marriage to her, all which proposals she rejected. Of this I desire a copy. Mr. Costin replied, Sir, you may have one from any of the newspapers in America. On Thursday and Friday was delivered out a list of 26 men who were to meet as a grand jury on Monday, the 22nd. But this list was called in the next day and 24 names added to it. Of this grand jury, 44 of whom only met, one was a Frenchman who did not understand English, one a Papist, one a professed infidel, three Baptists, 16 or 17 other dissenters, and several others who had personal quarrels against me and had openly vowed revenge. To this grand jury on Monday the 22nd, Mr. Costin gave a long and earnest charge to beware of spiritual tyranny and to oppose the new illegal authority which was usurped over their consciences. Then Mrs. Williamson's affidavit was read, after which Mr. Costin delivered to the grand jury a paper entitled, A List of Grievances Presented by the Grand Jury for Savannah, this day of August 1737. This the majority of the grand jury altered in some particulars, and on Thursday, September 1st, delivered it again to the court under the form of two presentments containing 10 bills, which were then read to the people. Herein they asserted upon oath that John Wesley Clerk had broken the laws of the realm contrary to the peace of our sovereign lord the king, his crown and dignity. 1. By speaking and writing to Mrs. Williamson against her husband's consent. 2. By repelling her from the Holy Communion. 3. By not declaring his adherence to the Church of England. 4. By dividing the morning service on Sundays. 5. By refusing to baptize Mr. Parker's child, otherwise than by dipping, except the parents would certify it was weak and not able to bear it. 6. By repelling William Hoff from the Holy Communion. 7. By refusing to read the burial service over the body of Nathaniel Polehill. 8. By calling himself Ordinary of Savannah. 9. By refusing to receive William Aglenby as a godfather only because he was not a communicant. 10. By refusing Jacob Matthews for the same reason and baptizing an Indian trader's child with only two sponsors. This, I own, was wrong, for I ought, at all hazards, to have refused baptizing it till it had procured a third. Friday, September 2nd, was the third court at which I appeared since my being carried before Mr. P. and the recorder. I now move for an immediate hearing on the first bill, being the only one of a civil nature, but it was refused. I made the same motion in the afternoon, but was put off till the next court date. On the next court date, I appeared again, as also at the two court following, but could not be heard because, the judge said, Mr. Williamson was gone out of town. The sense of the minority of the grand jurors themselves, for they were by no means unanimous, concerning these presentments may appear from the following paper which they transmitted to the trustees. To the Honorable the Trustees for Georgia. Whereas two presentments have been made, the one of August 23rd, the other of August 31st, by the grand jury for the town and county of Savannah in Georgia, against John Wesley Clerk. We whose names are underwritten, being members of the said grand jury, do humbly beg leave to signify our dislike of the said presentments, being by many and diverse circumstances thoroughly persuaded in ourselves that the whole charge against Mr. Wesley is an artifice of Mr. Costin's, designed rather to blacken the character of Mr. Wesley than to free the colony from religious tyranny, as he was pleased in his charge to us to term it. But as these circumstances will be too tedious to trouble your honors with, we shall only beg leave to give the reasons of our dissent from the particular bills. Friday, October 7th. I consulted my friends as to whether God did not call me to return to England. The reason for which I left it had now no force, there being no possibility as yet of instructing the Indians. Neither had I as yet found or heard any Indians on the continent of America who had the least desire of being instructed. And as to Savannah, having never engaged myself either by word or letter to stay there a day longer than I should judge convenient, nor ever taken charge of the people any otherwise than as in my passage to the heathens, I looked upon myself to be fully discharged therefrom by the vacating of that design. Besides, there was a probability of doing more service to that unhappy people in England than I could do in Georgia by representing, without fear or favor, to the trustees the real state the colony was in. After deeply considering these things, they were unanimous that I ought to go, but not yet. So I laid the thoughts of it aside for the present, being persuaded that when the time was come, God would make the way plain before my face. Why Wesley left Georgia. Thursday, November 3rd. I appeared again at the court, holding on that day, and again at the court, held Tuesday, November 22nd, on which day Mr. Clauston desired to speak with me. He then read me some affidavits which had been made September 15th, last past, in one of which it was affirmed that I then abused Mr. Clauston in his own house, calling him liar, villain, and so on. It was now likewise repeated before several persons, which indeed I had forgotten, that I had been reprimanded at the last court for an enemy to and hinderer of the public peace. I again consulted my friends, who agreed with me that the time we looked for was now come. And the next morning, calling on Mr. Clauston, I told him I designed to set out for England immediately. I set up an advertisement in the great square to the same effect and quietly prepared for my journey. Friday, December 2nd. I proposed to set out for Carolina about noon, the tide then serving. But about 10 the magistrate sent for me and told me I must not go out of the province, for I had not answered the allegations laid against me. I replied, I have appeared at 6 or 7 courts successively in order to answer them, but I was not suffered to do so when I desired it time after time. Then they said, however, I must not go unless I would give security to answer those allegations at their court. I asked, what security? After consulting together about 2 hours, the recorder showed me a kind of bond, engaging me under a penalty of £50 to appear at their court when I should be required. He added, but Mr. Williamson, too, has desired of us that you should give bail to answer his action. I then told him plainly, sir, you use me very ill, and so do the trustees. I will give neither bond nor any bail at all. You know your business, and I know mine. In the afternoon, the magistrates published an order requiring all the officers and sentinels to prevent my going out of the province and forbidding any person to assist me to do so. Being now only a prisoner at large in a place where I know my experience that every day would give fresh opportunity to procure evidence of words I never said and actions I never did, I saw clearly the hour was come for leaving this place. And as soon as evening prayers were over, about 8 o'clock, the tide then serving, I shook off the dust of my feet and left Georgia, after having preached the gospel there, not as I ought, but as I was able, 1 year and nearly 9 months. Saturday the 3rd. We came to Perrysburg early in the morning and endeavored to procure a guide to Port Royal, but none being to be had, we set out without one, an hour before sunrise. After walking 2 or 3 hours, we met with an old man who led us into a small path near which was a line of blazed trees, that is, marked by cutting off part of the bark, by following which, he said, we might easily come to Port Royal in 5 or 6 hours, lost in the woods. We were 4 in all. One intended to go to England with me, the other 2 to settle in Carolina.